Hello, and good day, and welcome to This Week in Quality. It's episode number 113. It's Friday, the 21st of November, 2025. I'm your host, Simon Tomes, Community Lead at Ministry of Testing, joined by the wonderful Ben Doan. How you doing, Ben?
I'm very good, thanks, Simon. I'm having a good week for all sorts of fun reasons that we'll get into a little bit later on.
I love it. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. So thanks to everyone who is joining this live, and see lots of good activity in the chat. Hello to Callum. Hello to Gary. I see Judy's joining us. Hi there, Rosie, Neil, Matilly, Richard, a few more folks jumping in. Lovely to see you join us live. This is also a big shout out to our podcast listeners as well. Thank you for joining us. And yeah, we hope you enjoy the show. For those who aren't familiar, This Week in Quality is a way for us to gather at the end of each week, and we talk about all things quality. You can come up on stage a little bit later, talk about your week, what you've been up to, perhaps some of the challenges you've been facing. You could share a win, whether it's big or small, some of the cool things you've been up to, or maybe you want to give a shout out and you want to share kudos to someone in the community who's been doing some awesome things. Come up on stage and give a shout out to that person, because we know for sure when folks get a positive shout out, they very much appreciate it. So maybe there's a good opportunity to do that. This is an official Ministry of Testing event if you're listening live. So the code of conduct is in place. You can find that on ministryoftesting.com. There's a link in the footer. The event tool that we're using, it's not quite yet possible to share links. So if you are looking to share links, apologies, you won't be able to do that. I can as host, so I will try my very best to share links as and when they get mentioned or as and when I mention them. I appreciate I haven't yet shared the code of conduct link, but I encourage you to head onto the homepage to go and find it. Righty, Ben Doan, full snack tester. What's been happening? How's your week in quality been?
Okay, so I've had loads of fun this week, and I'm going to tell you a quality story all about snacks, because of course you want a quality story about snacks. So, and bear with me a moment while I'm a little bit indulgent, but yesterday I had the great pleasure, and as some of you of a certain age, and I'm approaching 40, may realize, especially if you have kids, you don't often get a chance to actually go out midweek and do a thing. And last night I joined my younger brother and sister to go watch a comedy show. And before the show, we went and got some food. Well, my mum and dad looked after the kids, so this was a great treat. And we went to get some pizza at a little place called Slice and Brew. I will give it the shout out only because it was fantastic. It is not sponsored in any way, but this is in Nottingham. It was delicious. And my quality story is this. As part of one of the things that we ordered, one of the sides that we ordered, I think it was called Supli, which isn't something I've had before. I was interested in giving it a try. It's some kind of like fried pasta and cheese side. And I still haven't tried it because we got the rest of our food out. We didn't get the Supli. And then about a few minutes later, they came to the table and they said to us, the Supli, it's not coming out tonight as well as we like. So we're not going to serve it to you. I hope that's okay and you're not too disappointed. So they'd made the choice that having seen the dish come out from their kitchen, they'd done their quality control and they decided, you know what? This isn't up to our standards tonight. We're not going to give you any substandard food. We're actually going to make the choice. We won't charge you for it. We're not going to give it to you because it's not good enough. And I thought that was a really cool move. I've not actually had that before at any restaurants before. I've definitely had people run out of things. But yeah, they were just like, nope, this isn't good enough for you. We're not going to try tonight. I hope that's okay. And we had loads of food in the table. So we were like, yeah, no problem. Don't bring us anything instead. We've got lots of food.
Oh,
but as a quality store, I thought that is cool.
That's amazing. That like level of transparency, kind of fessing up and saying, oh, this isn't up to standard. I love it.
So yeah, that was my quality. Cool. And I think there's a lot we can learn from that in software. I think sometimes we feel under a lot of pressure and we're very afraid to delay things or to outright tell people they're not going to get a feature or a thing. So to actually have that, exactly what you're saying in the chat, to have that commitment to quality, to actually say, no, this isn't good enough, we won't give it to you. I was like, that is cool.
Yeah. It makes you wonder if there's a flip side of that situation where they said, and I imagine they would never do this because I imagine that's not how restaurants work, but if they said, okay, the quality is substandard, but since you've never tried it before, if you could give it a go, it's a, like an MVP or like a prototype, let us know what you think. I don't know. Would you have accepted it then if they had said to you, you can have it if you want, but we're telling you now this isn't as good as it should be? Would you have gone, oh, you know what, I'll still give it a go? Or would you have said, no, appreciate your candor and honesty, I'll try another time?
Do you know what? I don't know what I would have done, but I would have appreciated the honesty. And I think that had the context been that this was a new menu item they were trying out, it hadn't been on the menu to order maybe, or maybe been on a specials board. Like, had it been up front, this is a new thing, and we're not sure if we're happy with it yet, then I think I might have accepted it if I'd gone for it. I think had they come out after having already ordered it and the rest of our food comes out and then said, we're not sure, I think I'd have just said, no, thank you. But I think if it had been up front, like, ooh, new testing menu, we're beta testing these new dishes, and I don't know, we'd like your feedback on them, we're not sure if they're right yet. Yeah, could have been up for that 100%, but I think they'd have had to win up front about it.
And that your point about the framing makes it all important. So had they, as you say, framed it as a beta test or a beta taste, if I can say that word together, beta tasting, it sounds strange saying it out loud.
But beta better taste.
I love it. So there's, yeah, so the context and the framing of how we can deliver something and set expectations, I think matters, is really what you're saying here. And honesty, and also, as Callum has pointed out in the chat, as a customer, working with a customer who's up for, like, just being grateful for someone being straight up about what they're delivering can go a long way as well. So, yeah, I love it. That's a brilliant story.
And I'd love to briefly touch on a more public story, if you don't mind, as well, which I thought was another instance of great transparency. And that is this week's Cloudflare outage. And I'm sure people in the chat will have opinions on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the report, I think, was shared. We had it up on the homepage for a little while, their actual report and the kind of summary that they gave at the start and the detail throughout. It was impressive. Bit of transparency. But yeah, I'd love to get your take, Ben. What was your takeaway from what they published and what they shared?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed reading it. I appreciate, because I shared it on my LinkedIn and some people were saying, oh, I just read the first bit and it was boring, I didn't get to the end. I was like, okay, that's fair enough. But I thought it was really worth reading the whole thing. And what I really felt was, it was a really great example of how to do an honest post-mortem or a post-incident retrospective and, like, make yourself vulnerable to communicate it very cleanly to your customers. It didn't feel like there was any spin. It felt like it was a report. Maybe it had been tidied up with its language, but it felt like it was a report from engineers, where the detail had come from engineers. And it felt like it was very matter of fact, and they owned it. Right? It didn't feel like they were blaming anyone else. And they called out, which I thought was fantastic, the human element of them being scared that it was worried that it might be a large botnet attack because of other problems they'd recently had. And that initial incorrect assumption, like, led them down a slightly incorrect path. And I loved how they described that because of the way that the behavior presented itself, it was confusing, and that's why it took longer to do. And I thought calling out that fear and that confusion and how that contributed to things, I thought that was really proper job, because it wasn't just oh, this configuration failed for this reason, and this was the fix, done. Like, they could have been very matter of fact, but I think the way that they really dug deep to call those things out and publicly give so much insight into their internal workings and thought process, that's such a great example.
Yeah, it really was, and it really is. I think it's like the human side of it, like a bunch of engineers going, oh goodness, how, what the heck are we going to do? Initial worry, and just saying sorry, but not like overhamming it. It's just like, here's our approach. And it was just very human, I think, is the words I'm trying to get out. And I can, there was a lot of, it felt like a lot of hug ops, like, oh, you can really feel for the team. Like, imagine being a good part of that team trying to work out, like, what has happened? How are we going to resolve this? How are we going to communicate this? Like, the line, we are sorry for the impact to our customers and to the internet in general, given how much of a problem it caused everywhere. That pressure must be super intense. So it says a lot about their quality engineering leadership, the way that post is written. So yeah, kudos to them. We can learn a lot. Both for those following along live, but I'll also say it for the benefit of people who are listening on the podcast, that we have added that outage blog post to the Outages in the Wild collection, which you can find on ministrytesting.com. Just have a look for the collections link at the bottom of the footer. It's a lot of good stuff and lessons learned in each of those blog posts.
Absolutely. And I think there's some great comments in the chat to go along with some of what we've been saying so far. So what have we got? Oh, I need to scroll back up a bit. Let me just say some of the most recent ones. So Callum says, I've been talking about Monzo tone of voice a lot this week and how good human comms help a lot. Excellent, Callum. Judy says, conveying humanness in report makes me think humanness is encouraged in the culture. Ooh, I like that insight, Judy. That's cool.
If I can add to that, Ben, what I like about what you're sharing there, Judy, is it's like the concept that we keep talking about in the multiverse, like quality is care. And I think if people care, then it has to be humans that care, right? And being human is to care. So I think it's connected to that. So yeah, just trigger that thought about quality is care. Just really have empathy for whoever is on the receiving end of whatever we're building or products or services that we're providing. And just be straight up about it when things don't quite work out as you expect or as you want them to, the sort of standard that you hold yourself at. I think that really matters. So yeah, that's a great point, Judy. Thanks for sharing. And Callum, I'm familiar with the Monzo tone of voice guide. It's absolutely wonderful. So I'm going to share it in the chat because I have found it as a link. Thank you for that, Callum.
So before we start getting into such fun things as getting people on stage or answering some quality questions, do you have any shout outs or events coming up that you want to highlight while we're still early in the chat, Simon?
Yeah, absolutely. I always love promoting the events that are happening in the Motiverse, that's for sure. So what do we got? We have got all sorts of stuff coming up. Of course, we have now officially booked in every This Week in Quality leading up to the end of 2025. Look out for the This Year in Quality special on Friday, the 19th of December. We haven't quite done the branding for that, but that will be a year review where people can come and celebrate their year, tell us all about it, the ups and downs and everywhere in between. Do come along to that. We've also got a couple of lean coffees coming up soon. So the 26th of November, we've got a leadership lean coffee. And we also have an AI quality lean coffee. Plus, there's a live conversation happening between Drew Ponticus and Rosie Sherry about communities of practice. So highly recommend all of them. The latter that I mentioned is great if you are, you know, in a team and you're thinking like, how can I bring my team together around our practice? Maybe you run a chapter or you're part of a guild and you want to bring stuff to other people. That is a good one to get involved in for sure. Also, shout out to, well, us releasing the first module of the Software Quality Engineering Certificate. So very excited about this. So SQEC is our latest certificate. Module 1 is now live. It is wonderful. I've been part of reviewing every lesson, so I'm in a very privileged position to get early access to all the good stuff. So a wonderful, wonderful piece from Cassandra H. Leong, The Evolution of Software Testing to Quality Engineering. It's a great piece, gets you thinking about how things are changing or have changed. Stuart Thomas introduces us to what is quality engineering, and we've developed through that a wonderful model called the Core Approaches in Quality Engineering. So to get access to the certificate, you could jump all over that. Plus, there's a wonderful conversation between Kat Obering and Nicholas Sedgwick around the value of quality engineering. It's such a cool chat. The two of them together are brilliant. They've got lots of stories to tell, and it really brings to life why quality engineering matters, all the benefits of good, effective quality engineering. So that is, it's wonderful. I love watching it. Yeah, so if you are not on the, if you're not familiar with SQEC, do head over to ministrytesting.com, select the certs link in the header, and you should be able to find it there for those listening along. In the meantime, I will share a link in the chat and go check it out. It's brilliant. Ben, shall we get some people on stage? And I can start asking some questions. I kind of like in the questions that we've been asking each other recently on recent episodes to prompt discussion, to prompt some answers in the chat, to get people, encourage people to get up on stage and join us and share their thoughts. What do you reckon, Ben? Should I throw a question in the mixer and see what happens?
Sounds good. So one more shout out I'd like to give an event.
Oh, yes. Yeah, go for it.
That is the Friends of Good Software, or Frogs, have a lean coffee coming from Wednesday, the 3rd of December, 4 p.m. CET, so Central European time. So you need to adjust for UK time. And that is going to be another fun lean coffee event, which is free and open if you want to go and check it out. I know that Friends of Good Software are good friends of mine at very least.
Lovely stuff. Yeah, good bunch of folks running that. So yeah, do go check it out indeed.
So yeah, throw us a question, Simon, and then we'll encourage people as we're chatting to queue themselves up to come on stage.
Okay, right. So the question is this. Studay has a model called the Culture of Quality model. It includes four quality enablers that underpin the culture. What are those four quality enablers?
Four quality enablers that underpin a culture of quality.
He got it.
So this has got to be, just thinking about it, works on my machine would be number one. Number two is probably going to be, why didn't testing find the bug?
Yeah, you got it. Two out of four.
Yep. Number three has got to be, have we got a test for that? And number four, probably, when will testing be finished?
Wow, that's
preferably asked before the thing is finished. So that you haven't even had a chance to look at it yet. That's usually the... Did I get it right?
I think you got four out of four. And you were also hinting at the secret fifth one, that anyone can test and testing is easy.
Six out of four. Let's go.
Breaking those boundaries. Exactly. I'm afraid you didn't quite get it right, Ben, but this is good. This is a good starter. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to try and phrase the question in a shorter way and put it in the chat. People can also share their answers in the chat for those following along live. So here we go. So what are four quality enablers that underpin a culture of quality,
okay,
according to Studay? So if people want to share some thoughts, then please do put them in the chat. Or if you want to join in the conversation up on stage, we very much welcome you to do that. We really want as many people as we can get. I think the limit is maybe 10 people up on stage. So if we can try and break, that would also be some fun to do so.
Oh, that's cool. So let's go back to a moment for maybe a more sensible answer. So without necessarily trying to specifically guess Studay's mind, if I was thinking about enablers for an underpinning culture of quality, I think I'd love one of those things to be something about collaboration. So that kind of teamwork element. So I don't know if that's one of Stu's four. But I think that kind of working together in collaboration, if it isn't one of the four, it would probably be one of my four. Which, yeah, if you're talking about people, process, and those kind of four Ps, so that would be the people side of it.
Loving it. Yeah, this is great. Now, this is cool. Again, this is all open for discussion. There is an exact answer from Sude, of course, but I think the question itself is useful because it can get us thinking and we can debate our own experiences and throw them in the mixer. So from the chat, we have Callum. It's like an exam. Yes, it is, Callum. You will receive a pass or fail at the end of the episode, maybe a certificate, but let's see how everyone gets on. Scout Burghardt, thank you, Scout, for sharing. We have people, processes, tools, and results.
Ooh.
Yeah, I like it. Judy Mosley, guessing psychological safety, team ownership, and in brackets, still letting the coffee kick in, of course. So yeah, let's wait for that caffeine to take effect. Anyone else in the chat willing to throw some answers? Again, just go for it, right? There's no sense of right or wrong. It's all about just sparking a conversation.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So Scout is saying, and I'm glad you followed up on this one, Scout. I think it was said in the quality course, but I never really understood the part about results. So I actually wanted to ask in terms of people, processes, tools, and results, what people thought about results in terms of a culture of quality, because I've got opinions on this. Let me just share it rather than burying the lead there.
Yeah, you go for it.
So result, or maybe what I would like to call outcomes. So one thing, and I've been discussing this with a few people recently, is so you build some software, right? Maybe you've built a new product, or maybe you've built a new feature, or maybe you've enhanced an existing feature. And then I would ask, so what? So maybe you've built it with all sorts of best practices and you've built it with all sorts of glowing quality characteristics. It's secure, it's performant, it's accessible. But if that feature and that product isn't adopted by customers, by end users, if it's not earning your company any money, assuming it's a product that needs to earn you money, and if it's not bringing some value to your users by that, it's not helping them achieve the thing that they need to achieve when they're using your software, it doesn't matter how well you built it. It doesn't matter how performant it is. It doesn't matter what the level of quality is, because if it isn't used and it isn't bringing that value, you don't have the results. You don't have the outcome. So in terms of if you built it the right way, awesome. But if you built the right thing, then you might actually make some money out of it. Then you might actually be successful. Then you might have actually helped your users. So the results, to me, that's where I would put that in. It's about the outcomes of the work that you're producing, which is related to the quality, but it's really related to that kind of organizational success. I don't know if that's what Stu means.
That is what Stu means, Ben. I love it. I love the framing. It's wonderful that you shared that. So the official line is people, process, tools, and outcomes. So yeah, nice one, Scout. That was indeed from the course you mentioned, A Tester's Role in Continuous Quality. So let me just add that as a link for those following along in the chat. So yeah, Stu's got a good lesson within that course that's worth checking out. Very cool indeed.
It's a very cool course. And there's some cool stuff in there. So I'm just going to throw it out there as a blatant self-promotion as well. I do have a blog post which I wrote in 2003 that's called "That Shiny New Feature Works. Yeah, so what?" Which I'll send you a link to, Simon, if you want to share around, where I discuss some of these topics. So I'm cheating a bit because not all of that was new thinking on my behalf.
We can refer to them as oracles, right? If you want to think of it as cheating, but I say oracle.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Let me share that. Thanks for bringing me the link to that. I was just jumping onto your NOT profile to go and grab it, but I appreciate you have instant access. But yeah, it's such a good point, right? We can build this amazing thing, and then if it's of no value and we can't measure the outcome and impact it has on our customers, then that's an issue. We should do something about that. But we got a few more answers coming in. I saw that Richard Adams shared people, people, and people. I love it. The four P's.
Yes. So I love this because there's another model which I've heard before, which is a quote, and I forget who it's from, so perhaps chat can help me out, or maybe you know this one, Simon, which is, it's always a people problem.
Yeah, I think that was Jerry Weinberg.
Probably is, yeah.
It sounds like one of his, quotes. But yes, and then Gary shares, Gary Hawks, the why of features is a question I'm often repeating to product teams. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah, I remember you mentioning that before, Gary. Perhaps as a club post, I think you talked about the importance of always asking why, and perhaps in some cases it would not annoy your colleagues, but they'd be like, ah, here we go again. We're getting the why question from Gary. But that's a good thing, right? We've got it. If no one else is going to ask the why, then who else is going to do it but us good folks?
Simon, we have a Callum waiting to our stage. Shall we get Callum to join us?
100%. Callum, I'm going to bring you on stage. Thank you for switching off your camera. It was lovely to see you briefly on camera. But yes, let's keep this voice only. I will add you to the stage. And yeah, just jump straight on in, Callum.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Ben. Lovely to see you. Long-time listener, first-time caller in it. So something that was really interesting to me there when we're talking about quality is that we defaulted to speaking about features. And we also defaulted to speaking about end customer or end user. And we can fall into a trap quite often when we start thinking about quality as thinking it's something that only a end customer can use. But quality is quite holistic. And especially when we think about people, there's all different sorts of people that want to have an impact on quality. Some conversations I've been having recently was around the quality as it pertains to, say, your marketing department, or your engineering core room, or your support team as well. So when we think about quality and when we think about the people aspect of things, we should be thinking really holistically about what quality means. If we fall into the trap of just thinking end customer is the only person we have to please, what does that mean for the business? Because the business wants to be able to sell something to a wide amount of people, but if you'll just try to please the individual, that end customer, and each and every one of those end customers, you end up with this huge, massive, complex product, which then may not work for your support teams. So quality is definitely a balancing act there. It's not just about pleasing people. It's about understanding what does good enough look like in all those cases. What do you think about that sort of thought?
Oh, I love that point of view, Callum. Yes. I'm going to say yes and keep the conversation going in proper improv style, which I know is your bag, Callum. But yeah, no, and I think that there are two things that really come together here. One is about those outcomes that we were talking about rather than the other side of it. And then the second is what you just said, which is, yes, we need to focus on outcomes, but those results, those outcomes, don't just have to be outcomes that lead to features in the end product. Those outcomes could be, well, we managed to deliver it for cheaper because we can now run it on half the cloud infrastructure. We managed to support this more easily because now we can parse the logs twice as quickly, or the logs have so little noise, we can see the errors really easily. So, or now there's half the code, so our developers can add new things with less worrying about what's going on. So you're absolutely right that if we combine these two ideas together, it really starts to get to that quality culture, quality engineering principles that we started from. You have to have both the holistic and the focus on outcomes as well as the other things. But I think, yeah, you add those two things together, it starts to become pretty powerful.
I can completely agree with you. And it's why when we think of quality enablers and as the testers, as quality engineers, as any sort of quality professional, a real quality enabler for us is pragmatism and a view of like, what does good enough look like? A lot of times that I failed, and I don't know how much this resonates with other people, but a lot of times that I failed when trying to influence quality, building a culture of quality, is when I'm told your bar to quality is too high. And I don't know if you've ever been told that ever in your career as well, but that view of like your bar for quality being too high ends up with that sort of view of you're not being pragmatic enough. You haven't really ascertained what's good enough for everyone. And sometimes even something like velocity of the team is what's important. That's what quality means. Can we finish work in a timely manner? So you can't just like keep your quality level really high. So when I speak to all of this, and I guess when I'm adding on to Stu Day's view of the world, I'd be thinking of pragmatism as a real quality enabler, because it's that view of all the different viewpoints that could be there in quality and what's needed by all the different people that are involved.
I love that, Callum. That's brilliant. Thank you for joining the stage and sharing that. It reminds me of, there's a person that might may or may not be on folks' radar called Lincoln Murphy. He talks a lot about when you're building SaaS products and services. His model is, he says, desired outcomes and appropriate experience is his definition of quality. So what he's saying there is, some customers, they're not like, hey, I want world-class, best, has to be utterly mind-blowing, incredible. It just has to be good enough. It has to provide, has to satisfy the desired outcome, and they have to have some appropriate experience to achieve that desired outcome that kind of matches what works for them. And that really can come down to your point, Callum, about being good enough. It doesn't have to be like the greatest thing, like this sort of this perhaps obsession we sometimes have, like everything has to be perfect. It's what is the desired outcome for a cohort of folks, and what appropriate experience can we give those people as they experience that product and service?
Definitely. And when we come to thinking about like good enough, like another way to think about it that I've been using is to think of things in terms of bronze, silver, and gold. Gold being aspirational. And gold is usually where we as testing professionals actually try and pitch ourselves. But we have to remember that something bronze is a podium finish. It's a win. And hitting bronze might be awesome and actually be more pragmatic than trying to gold plate something, especially when we're trying to influence like project managers, the board of execs, people who want a bit more velocity, or even fellow engineers as well. So yeah, like you say, like good enough kind of view. We shouldn't be seeing it as a failure ever. We should be seeing it as like a podium finish, a win, because that's what's actually wanted and needed. We could then say even better-ish, but we shouldn't be there saying like, unless you're going for the gold, why bother taking part?
What I like about that is, if we apply the kind of quality as care model and like have that lens to look at it, you could argue if people are taking too long to deliver something, or they're obsessing over every quality attribute under the sun, they're not really caring, because they're probably not paying real attention to what is important and what matters and what is good enough to get something in front of someone that they can experience it, to build those feedback loops. So it's actually, I think, to go gold plated is probably caring less, because it then maybe becomes a bit of an ego thing, where a team has an ego like, no, we need to prove that we are the ultimate and we can deliver the best of the best. And I think when we let that ego go when it comes to product engineering and putting out good software, I think it can make a difference.
Simon, you've hit the nail on the head. I love to hear this. It very much is about ego and putting your ego aside. Good enough and actually driving quality means putting aside your ego and putting aside, sometimes we call, have you heard of the curse of knowledge, where you're burdened with too much knowledge about the art of the possible and what could be, so much so that you forget that like a subset of that can still be good. It's not about proving that we know more about quality, that we know all the different things that there could be, and trying to win, because that's just egocentric, that's ego driven. It's actually about finding that ground. What is good enough? What do people need? What do people want? And that's where we can have that real disconnect. Whenever we see all these memes about test versus dev out there in the world, a lot of that comes on that ego place. You see that going, I got one over and I'm beating you. I have a better view of quality than you, because I tested whilst Mercury was retrograde and VO was in ascension, and I was holding a plate of lime jelly. I couldn't use both hands because I was holding a plate of lime jelly. It's all just ego driven. It's not actually useful. And that view of good enough is down to what's useful for things.
You had me at lime jelly.
I'm bringing it back to snacks, Ben. I'm always bringing it back to snacks for you.
I'm going to throw it out there, Simon. I think we could go on this question forever, but do you want to throw us another one in there and see how we get on?
Yeah, absolutely. And do stick around on stage, Callum, and jump in as the conversation continues. Unfortunately, I had my mic on mute because I was just cracking up as you were sharing the fact, Adam. It's a great line. Perhaps also let's call out some of the comments coming in through the live chat. So Judy Mosley, context matters though. Good enough in the experience of driving a car is, or using an app that manages your finances is different than an online game. Ah, yeah, of course. How it will impact the end user will help define good enough. I love it. Impact driven. That's brilliant.
Judy makes a really good point there as well, like impact the end user and defining good enough, especially when we think of games as well, because games are one of these like rare things that we can consume or that we deliver. We have the concept of beta or early access, where we accept a lower level of quality in exchange for getting something faster. So that context is really important, especially when we think about gaming versus, say, a product where it's like a car, which has to work because there's safety concerns in, and you have to have a finished product. Quite often, I think we definitely think of just the context of car delivery, like even quality control or Kanban. It's all about talking about like that old process of like building cars mechanically that has to have a perfect outcome. Whereas the reality of the situation is very much more that sort of beta online game. We can change things a bit more faster, right?
Yes, indeed. Gary Hawkes shares, I think to find the line of where pragmatism ends and poor quality begins, you set the quality bar high. If you started with being over pragmatic, it'd be a dangerous journey to find good enough. Thanks, Gary, for sharing that. And folks who are sharing in the chat, if you do want to join us up on stage to jump on in and share your voice so folks can hear you, you are more than welcome to do so. Ben, back to your point about let's throw in another question. Let's do it, right? Okay, here comes another one also related to Sude's quality model, just whilst we're focusing on that for now. Okay, here is the question. What is a quality narrative in the culture of quality model? And this is very much connected to what we've already been talking about, but I think it's a good one to really narrow down. What is a quality narrative in the culture of quality model?
Ooh, so I'm going to throw it out there again. So a quality narrative is where you talk so much about testing, everyone gets bored.
Yes, congratulations. That's a 10 out of 10 answer. Not quite, Ben, but I like where you're going to start off with.
I actually wrote a blog piece about quality narratives. I don't know if that's why you selected it.
But honestly, Callum, I didn't because of that, but I know you always talk about quality narratives and I'd pre-selected this question before you even joined the event. So that is just a mystical moment, right?
Psychic powers. So to me, a quality narrative is about the way that we can talk about quality holistically. It's a good replacement for, say, a test report. A report usually is like a condensed view of the world that sort of tries to compress down into numbers or a graph or really salient points to go, cool, like here's your pass or fail criteria, like here's what we found as a result of something. Whereas a narrative is more of a communication around quality. What's the good, what's the bad, and what's the ugly? We sometimes talk about a quality narrative when we're doing debriefs and exploratory testing. So a quality narrative is just a slightly more open, a more sort of wider way of communicating what we know about something to help inform decisions and build influence on quality as well.
Thank you, Callum, for sharing that. Ben, feel free to jump on in.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because, and I've actually got I'm using all available resources and I'm reading some of the quality narrative stuff from Sude's blog post while we're talking about it. It almost feels like some of what the quality narrative is in the model is also about replacing that high level summary of the quality strategy, or where it's about how you start at the top by telling the story of what your intention is. So it's a bit like that bar setting for exactly what Gary was saying, where the line is between good quality and good enough, and like how you describe that and how you aim for it. And this is really interesting to me because I'm going through a bit of a project at work at the moment, trying to find our definitions of quality and our set our quality narrative. And I think I'm going to share some of this more widely with the people that I'm working with to see if they can consume some of this Callum and Stu Day wisdom to help us on our journey.
I love that. Yeah, spread the word, folks. I feel we should continue to talk about this more. And I wonder if there's things outside of our domain or our motiverse, should we say, that we can think about when it comes to narrative, like how are people out there who are doing good things on this planet influencing and inspiring people to come along on the journey with them? And I think they often will use a narrative that resonates, speaks a language, use words that inspire people, that are very honest and open. I guess you could say that Flair post, get my words out correctly, you got a sense of like how they speak about quality internally, given the way that they presented the information in that blog post. So there's something in that's maybe connecting it to how we market or describe why we're doing what we're doing and how we can connect it to people's day-to-day. There's something in that as well. And that I think needs to be done as much internally with our internal customers and partners and stakeholders, as well as folks who are looking to purchase our products and services.
I think something you really touched upon there, Simon, is talking about like how do people inspire? And that inspirational aspect or narrative is really important because it invites conversation and it invites learning and it invites inquisitiveness quite often. A report is usually just to say, hey, I've done this thing, and it ends there. Whereas something more like a narrative around something, I think that inspires people to have a bit more of a conversation around it, which is great. And that's what you want, especially if you're like coming into an organization to build a culture of quality. You want to get as many people like on board with that. You want to get lots of people excited by the idea of quality. And the way you do that is to help them with a conversation. Ben mentioned it earlier, the idea of yes and. Yes, I'm a qualified Dungeons and Dragons playing fiend and improver, so I love a bit of yes and. But that helps. Like, if you open things up, if you use a warm human tone of voice, Monzo tone of voice, you invite people to come on that journey with you. I think it's really important to building a culture of quality. It takes away your challenges because you get people wanting to come on that journey with you, right?
Totally. And it encourages a bit of debate. It encourages a bit of maybe healthy conflict. Maybe that's too strong a term, but just a way for people to disagree with each other, but in a way that is centered around a particular thing that matters. Quality is care. We want to deliver something that is of value to our customers. We want to do it in a way that's as most efficient or as efficient as possible it can be as a team, so it reduces friction at the right points. And that's okay. I think when teams can disagree, like members can disagree with each other in a healthy way, that's only a good thing when it comes to quality. And I think the narrative is a way of making sure folks are respectful of each other and question it as well and say, we said this a while back, but maybe it's different now. Maybe we've got more information, we learnt more things, and therefore we can change our approach.
Yes, and I think focusing on the challenging the idea and not the person can be really healthy. And holding yourselves as a team accountable for delivering that quality. So, and that goes back to that post again about the Cloudflare issue. Owning that accountability rather than pushing it onto others, owning that this is what we could have done to do about it. This is what we can do to influence it. And I think that's a really healthy thing as part of building a culture of quality. One thing that I see as a risk to a culture of quality and a risk to organizational quality is when we create boundaries and we, rather than taking collective responsibility where we're all working for how can we be involved in improving things. What we're really looking for is who can we figure out is the right person, the right team to own this thing so we don't have to. Rather than thinking, how can we make it easier for that team? How can we support the team? We're like, oh, how can we transfer this to the other team? And that's a risk.
You really touched upon something interesting there, Ben. But I think the reason why we sometimes don't want to do a narrative and the reason why we don't engage into these conversations, and as Simon said there, is that idea of conflict. And conflict comes from this idea that there's a winner and a loser. And quite often, as we said before, like in the testing profession, we need to be seen to be winning or be seen to be the people with the answers to things. We can wrap a lot of ego up in our work, in the thing, in our knowledge, in the things we do. And that can make us sometimes a bit afraid to be vulnerable, a bit afraid to be human and to have those sorts of conversations because, you know, that those conflicts, what if you don't, what if you realize that the right thing or good enough is actually more on the other person's side than your side? And as we move more towards quality engineering and away from like more traditional models, thinking about testing and quality, I think we're going to see a lot more of this viewpoint of how do we bring humility into what we're doing? We know that we're good at testing and quality thinking, but how do we therefore help bring other people up? How do we make compromises? And how do we help their thinking take our own ego out of the equation?
Love it. Absolutely love it, Callum. I think you're absolutely onto something there. And I think that's really what I've observed as I have managed to work in roles that are more and more close to this quality engineering model. Whether I've been called quality engineer or not, like as I've actually been a quality engineer and able to embrace the model, one of the really big things I've noticed is a change in my mindset, but also a change in the way that engineers and teams engage with me. Where in the traditional, like earlier on in my career, I'm only going to compare myself to myself, but earlier on in my career, when I was in more traditional roles, I really treated it as my mission is to do the best testing I can do, to find the most bugs I can find, and to influence the quality by making the best recommendations on how to fix things, improve things, right? So it was all a bit ego-driven, but also it was very much, how can I improve myself? And with quality engineering, it massively changes the relationship. So now I'm thinking, how can I make it more accessible for the engineers and the teams I'm working with to build quality in? How can I make it easier for them to test? How can I make it more obvious for them to learn the art of the possible? How can I get them excited about quality? And ultimately, it's all about how can I help them do their job rather than how can I do my job better so that like I'm succeeding in myself, but like not worrying so much about what the developers do on it, right? So while I think we talk a lot about the throwing it over the wall to testers, to quality people, when developers throw code over the wall, I think we rarely actually touch on the topic of the problem in traditional testing, where we throw bug reports or test reports at engineering teams and expect them to just deal with that transfer. So I think it really works both ways. And I think that we can work to eliminate both of those things by embracing the quality engineering and really collaborating instead of isolating.
I think it's really great to share that. Thank you, Ben. Like something that I just to share, like some experiences I had that stopped me from doing that exact same thing and thinking of like me comparing myself to me, like you did to you. Like a lot of times in my career, especially early, I was afraid of being made obsolete, redundant, and not being needed in teams, especially when there's a prevailing narrative across the industry around, do we even need testers or testers being made redundant and they're always the first ones to go. And that can get you into a mindset of being quite closed and trying to be like the arbiter of information or an oracle of information. And that leads down a path of like being less of a trusted advisor being less of a narrative giver and more of a, you will do it this way and only I know how to do this, so you've got to keep me, comes from a place of fear at the time, or it did for me anyway when I did those sorts of things. I don't know if that resonates with anyone.
Certainly. Yeah, Ben, go for it.
What I was going to say, I've definitely had that where maybe for me, I didn't observe it from fear, but it definitely was about motivators, right? So, and it was about reward. So it was about the way that my performance was being evaluated and rewarded, where finding more bugs and producing more test reports and writing more test cases was the way that I was, had value assigned to me and was given feedback and was ultimately given pay and promotions, right? So it's about what is the motivator. Fear is a very big motivator, and there are other motivating factors as well. And I think this comes back to that organizational quality where you can look from a quality engineering and building a quality culture point of view and find things like, well, perhaps one of the risks that we have to quality isn't anything to do with the technical side of things. Perhaps it's to do with the way that we're structuring our like professional evaluation systems from a HR point of view. Like, how are we actually measuring the success of the developers or of the testers or of the quality engineers or the product people or our salespeople? And you look at those different things, and they can be very powerful motivators when you're being told to act and behave in a certain way to meet those goals and those targets. That can be massively either conflicting between different groups of people. So I've seen that a lot where there's, and I know that some of the talks from the Testing Planet about quality and quality engineering and teams spoke, touched on this from some very cool people. But that kind of conflict where motivations are at cross purposes can be really disruptive. And now we're getting so meta, I'm realizing that my cross-purpose is now the fact that we're coming close or even slightly over time, and I want a cup of tea before my next meeting.
It's all good. I'm loving the conversation. Oh, thank you so much for sharing, folks. So just very quickly came to mind, I was trying to think, I loved your framing there, Callum. You said a narrative giver, or are you something else? I was thinking like, the question I would pose would be, are you a tragedy taker or a narrative giver? I'll leave that with you. So, and coming back to the original question, so I can give the official answer, but I think we have covered it. Let me see if I can find my question. So it was, what is a quality narrative in the culture of quality model? And as described by yourself, Callum and Ben, it is a narrative to describe quality that everyone in the team is aligned on and can get behind. There we go, folks. So I think we all passed. I think we all got 10 out of 10. So it's all good. But in all seriousness, thank you so much to everyone who has joined live during this week in quality. And thank you to our listeners on the podcast as well. To everyone who's participated in the chat, loved it, loved all the commentary that's coming through. We do hope we've shared as much as we can for our listeners. And thank you, Callum, for joining us up on stage. It's been a pleasure to chat with you today and also to co-host with you, Ben. Please do continue to check out ministryoftesting.com. The site will update maybe 4 or 5 times a day. Do subscribe to the newsletter, which Rosie Sherry is now writing. So ministryoftesting.com/newsletter. Ben, any final thoughts before we sign off today's episode?
My final thoughts are, failure is always an option and failure is feedback. The first is a quote from Mythbusters and the second is from Judy Mosley. So thank you very much.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Okay, folks. Take care of yourselves and enjoy the rest of the day, and we will speak to you all soon. Bye for now.